All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. We got a dual monitor.
Dual
setup.
Monitor, baby. Woo! So we have the Wikipedia entry on one and recording on the other.
It means we can have our phones not so close to the microphone, which I hear is supposed to be good.
Nice.
I hear that's supposed to be better.
That's
for
good.
The audio.
Nice.
We'll find out.
Well, we will find out.
But I'm so excited.
I am too. So, Christmas is coming up. We're in full swing of Hanukkah.
Yeah, we're currently doing Hanukkah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe, like, Christmas is so close.
I know.
This year has just, like, flown by.
I know, it really has. But also it kind of felt infinite.
Yeah.
A little bit. Really weird.
Really, like, Einstein's theory of relativity, had it not been discovered before this year, would have definitely been discovered
very
this
true.
Year.
Very true. So yeah, I think it's going to be a fun Christmas, even though it'll be small.
Yeah. I am excited.
Yes.
And with that, of course, comes Christmas movies.
Christmas movies.
This is what our second one we've done on the feed, because I think Christmas Mail was our first.
Yeah. That one got a lot of views, and I was like, Drew Gooden fans.
Drew Gooden fans, baby.
They were like, oh.
They were like, I remember this movie. And then they were just like, they just told all the Drew Gooden jokes again.
But we did a little bit more of a deep dive, because we did watch.
We've tried to focus on the scenes that were not focused on in the Drew Gooden video.
Yes. Which I think we did a good job of.
It's hard to not have the same reactions as Drew Gooden, because his reactions are so relatable.
Yeah, they are. He's just a wonderful entertainer. But I just think that we kind of nitpicked the fine details a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that movie really is all about the tiny moments that you're like, huh, wait, what?
What? And if you want more of that type of movie, on our Patreon, we just did, Holidate.
Holidate.
The Netflix original.
Oh, Netflix original. Not good.
Definitely give it a listen on our Patreon. It stars Emma Roberts and some Australian guy.
Yep, and Kristen Chenoweth.
And we talk about that movie. It's not as bad as Christmas Mail, but it's its own type of bad.
It is its own type of bad. It's a better production quality.
Much better production quality.
But also I think that's because Emma Roberts is in it.
Yeah, it clearly had budget. It was a Netflix original.
Yeah.
Versus like Christmas Mail was like an ION TV original.
Yes.
So
Faith and Family.
Yeah. So this one, again with the originals.
So we're doing a Hulu original. I was just surfing the Hulu suggestions for holiday movies.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously I'm a huge horror fan, so I have a lot of that in my history. So they recommended this. So I figured before we get to more classic movies, as we get closer and closer to Christmas, we could do this weird made-for-TV film that's an hour and 20 minutes.
It's Pooka!
Pooka! Exclamation point.
Exclamation point. Okay, well, so this is a part of, like, an anthology thing that Hulu's doing called, like, Into the Dark.
Yeah, and it's, like, holiday-themed horror, which are, like, pretty short, so, like, I think just, like, a minimum of length of a movie,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, this is the third one of these. It stars Nysha Hatendi.
Yeah.
Latasha Rose.
John Daly.
Dale Dickey.
And John Barryman. Johnny Barryman.
None of these people I really know.
No, me either.
I feel like Nysha Hatendi I've seen before.
Yeah, me too.
But I don't know in what.
Yeah, me either.
So, let's get into the plot.
Yes.
So, unemployed actor Wilson Clowes moves into a new apartment building to start a new life, befriending a fellow resident, an older woman named Red. He finds a vague audition announcement in a coffee shop and attends.
Mm-hmm.
After an unusual physical component, Wilson is offered the acting job by Finn, the advertising director for a new Christmas toy called Pooka.
I will say, I was so bored up until the point when John Daly came in.
Yeah, this is like, the very beginning is
this
just
is
like,
when I texted you and I was like, okay, it's starting to get interesting.
It's, overall this, we'll just talk, we'll keep going.
Yeah.
I have some feelings about this movie overall.
This is when it kind of starts to kick in though.
Yeah, this is like the plot starts kicking in. A stuffed animal with large eyes, Pooka selectively repeats what it hears in either a naughty or nice voice. And Wilson's job will be to portray Pooka in a large furry costume in both advertisements and live appearances.
There's a really interesting scene where he is introduced to the costume, and whenever he's like, the costume came first.
Yeah. Yeah, like...
There's only one of them, and yeah, the costume came first.
Yeah, Wilson is informed he is the sole actor portraying Puka, which makes no sense.
Makes no sense. Weird. And there's only one Puka store, and it's a pop-up.
Mm-hmm. But it's, like, a nationwide craze.
Yeah.
He accepts after realizing how much he will be paid. So, the first thing, he puts the suit on. And he immediately has some sort of, like, bad physical reaction.
Yeah, he starts going...
He starts, like, hyperventilating in the costume, and he takes it off, and he doesn't like it. But then he accepts it because, basically, they're going to pay him so much that he can't say no.
Yeah. Struggling actor needs to...
Yeah, they're in Hollywood, I guess?
Yeah, I assumed LA.
They say that they are, although nothing around them indicates that that
looks
is the
case.
Looks
a little bit more like Arizona or New Mexico.
Yeah. It probably is.
Honestly?
She would have filmed there. So, Wilson's portrayal of Puka coincides with the toy's skyrocketing popularity. Mm-hmm. However, the costume begins having strange side effects on the actor. When wearing the costume in naughty mode, Wilson is prone to violent outbursts and hallucinations and will have no recollection of them afterwards. Meanwhile, Finn manages to get Wilson the business card of Melanie, a real estate agent to whom he has become attracted after seeing her at a Christmas tree farm and then at one of his in-store events.
Kind of stalkery.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like he's following her. She just keeps appearing where he is.
And he's like, ooh, she's so beautiful.
And then his boss is basically like, I'll help you out, buddy.
Yeah, I got her number for you, saying
real estate
things. Yeah.
Which is weird because you're like, how does he know that?
Yeah.
But then Wilson... Okay, so I'll just...
No, it's because her poster is all over the place.
Oh, okay. So Wilson attends an open house showing put on by Melody, and the two hit it off, and they start dating. Mm-hmm. Wilson manages to get Melanie's son, Ty, a Puka toy, much to the boy's pleasure.
This kid is my favorite actor in the whole movie.
He's really good.
He's really good. He's a cute kid.
They go to the Christmas tree lot, pick out a tree together, and then later put it up in Melanie's house. Mm-hmm. That kind of, like, skips some weird stuff, but I think it's telling it sort of, like, out of order a little bit.
Puka, see... Puka do, Puka me, Puka you.
It's kind of a bop.
It's kind of a bop.
I can't lie, like, Puka seems like a fun toy.
It does. I was like, this is pretty cool.
Wilson's hallucinations continue, and he has a vision of himself as Naughty Puka entering Red's apartment and killing her. Mm-hmm. However, when he visits her apartment, she appears unharmed, and as they talk, Wilson remembers that he made his life change to get away from some sort of pain that he thinks he caused. Wilson offers to have Puka appear at Ty's birthday, and he appears in costume. The lack of Ty's father figure at the party causes one of the older kids to point this out to Ty and comments that everyone knows why his father isn't there. This triggers Wilson into Naughty Puka, and we see the room turn red from Puka's eyes. Mm-hmm. He then attacks the child in front of Ty, causing him to be frightened. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Melanie still has no idea that Wilson is Puka, who is upset that the guy in the Puka costume would attack a child, and then later discusses it with Wilson. Wilson seems to not acknowledge that it was him in the costume and takes Melanie's concern as blame and gets very angry.
Yeah.
He then sees that the tree they had gotten with Ty is gone and accuses Melanie of not trusting him. Melanie doesn't know what tree he's talking about, and it is implied that there never was one. She demands that Wilson leave. Mm-hmm. And then, like, after that, he goes back to his apartment and he looks at a picture of them in front of the tree.
But there's no tree.
But there's no tree.
Yeah, and also, during this time, like, he... gets home and he's like trying to find his costume and he's like hyperventilating outside of the costume.
Yeah, like
and
he starts freaking out when he doesn't have the costume.
Yeah, and then he puts the head on and he like calms down. Like the opposite of what happened earlier.
So at this point,
he's already masturbated with the head on.
Oh, yeah. At this point, I think like for me, I'm like, oh, is Puka haunted or is like he going insane?
Yeah.
These are my only two theories at this point.
Yes.
For 90% of the movie.
Yes,
these
definitely.
These are my only two theories. So you're kind of like getting more of the like, okay, it is Wilson and he's having like a break with reality or something.
He's like somehow thinking that he is Puka.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So
like
anyway,
that.
She demanded that Wilson leave.
Mm-hmm.
The Puka toy suffers a widespread malfunction, causing all the toys to repeat only this one distorted phrase in Puka's naughty voice. Look at all the pretty lights.
Mm-hmm.
Puka's popularity plummets, and Wilson is let go from his job. During an encounter in a bar, however, Finn tells Wilson that there never was a Puka, and Wilson realizes the bar he's in is actually empty. As all this occurs, the costume appears to be inseparable from Wilson, who is seen visibly hyperventilating until he puts the Puka head on.
Yeah.
While the puka with the puka costume on, he goes to Melanie's house and leaves a box with a puka toy, which is relaying an apology for his outburst. Melanie is disturbed and then out the window sees Puka watching from across the street. A pedestrian gets into a fight with Wilson, takes the puka head, exposing Wilson as Puka to Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
Wilson's hallucinations worsen. One night, he arrives at his apartment building to find that Red has fallen to her death. The onlookers and investigators imply it was an accidental death due to Red being drunk, but suspecting the sentient Puka, which Wilson has been hallucinating, he goes up to Red's apartment and finds Puka coated in gasoline and with fire in its eyes. Afraid that Puka will now go after Melanie and Ty, Wilson calls Melanie to warn that they are in danger, but Ty picks up and quickly dismisses Wilson by saying they have to go to the Christmas tree farm to get a new one. Wilson goes to the farm and finds the sentient Puka costume, which he attacks with an axe and seemingly kills. When he goes to Melanie's house, she no longer appears to be living there, and when he goes to the open house home where they first met, he sees the truth about his past. Wilson and Melanie were, in fact, husband and wife and lived in the open house. Wilson, in the Puka costume, watched as past Wilson, prone to violent outbursts, destroys the Christmas tree and breaks it in half, while Ty watches from the doorway. Past Wilson pleads Melanie and Ty to go to the tree lot to get a new tree with him, causing Puka Wilson to plead to past Melanie to not listen to him as he watches the final scene play out, but she cannot hear him. In the closing scene, Puka Wilson witnesses his past self trying to make up for his violence by driving Melanie and Ty to a Christmas tree farm. During the drive, Melanie attempts to distract Ty from Wilson's frantic driving by remarking, "Look at all the pretty lights." But Wilson, looking in the rearview mirror at Melanie and Ty, crashes head-on into another car. He is thrown from the vehicle, and Melanie and Ty are killed when it explodes. The driver of the other car was Red, who was killed in the crash. Puka and Wilson are the sentient Puka Wilson and the sentient Puka suit watch sadly as the version of Wilson who is driving the car is taken away by paramedics, one of which is Finn, and the distorted voice of Ty's Puka toy repeats, "Look at the pretty lights."
The ending really pulls the whole thing together.
The ending came out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
Here's what I think is the bad part about this movie.
Yes.
If this is the ending, it doesn't give any hints through the whole movie
that
this is coming up. I think the problem with this movie is that it's kind of boring.
It is boring.
Because you're like, okay, either the Puka suit is haunted or the guy is going insane. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the two.
Yeah.
And you're like, you figure that out. You think that very early
yes.
on. Yes. And it never changes. You never get the hint that, like, oh, maybe there's more. I think if they had played a little more with, like, things legitimately, like, will happen, like, multiple times.
Yeah.
If things were happening, like, multiple times, like, in a row. Or if it was, like, he was seeing the same people everywhere. Or if he was seeing, like, for example, like, maybe if he was, like, looking at Ty and he saw him all burned up and then
yeah.
he looked away and, I don't know, things like that.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things in horror movies that hint, like, something bigger is going on.
Very Shutter Island, like, Shutter Island does a really good job of
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
Like, if throughout the entire film, they hint at, like, what is actually going to happen.
Which, and it's like, you still would probably be like, oh, he's crazy.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be like, I still am not really sure what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he just crazy? Is he having a mental break? Is he dead? Is this, like,
is this all, like, just his brain going through what it goes through to, like, process what's
I don't
happening?
Know, like, was he ever in the Puka suit? Did that even happen?
Because Finn said there was no Puka.
I know, exactly. It's like,
or was he just imagining that he was the Puka because he remembered that from when his son and wife died?
Exactly. It's like, I don't know. Like, what's part of me thinking, like, okay, so Puka's not real. Like, Puka's a real toy. This is what I kind of think. Puka's a real toy. He was never Puka.
I agree.
He was a struggling actor who was abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And when he, in his mind, he's, like, playing out meeting Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
And this is maybe, like, him having a mental break trying to escape the trauma of what he did.
Yeah.
And, because he lived and they died. Because it's clear that he lives.
Yes.
He clearly lives.
Yeah.
Part of me is thinking, like, so this is, like, he has, like, a mental break. And the reason all the Pukas have the malfunction is, in real life, the Pukas did not malfunction. The mm-hmm. Pukas were just a really, really famous national toy and all that stuff was true. But it, like, he wasn't the only Puka. He wasn't even a Puka. And maybe the only reason he thinks that is because that's, like, one of the last things he remembers seeing.
Yeah.
And then Red is, of course, his neighbor because that was the other woman he killed in the car.
Yes.
You notice that Red was in the car with another woman mm-hmm.
who you see in her house in pictures,
but who isn't in the film.
Yeah.
And then Melanie's ex-boyfriend is, of course, him, but you don't know that.
Yeah, because everyone knows about Ty's dad.
Yeah. Which is like, but we're the only people that don't. He's the only one that doesn't know about Ty's dad because he is Ty's dad.
Yes.
I mean, part of me just thinks that none of it's real. It's like a break with reality for him trying to cope, trying to run. Because he says to Red, like, I think I came here to get away from something I did that was bad. Mm-hmm. I think I hurt someone and I'm trying to run away from it.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's kind of what it's about.
I think so, too.
I don't really understand all the Puka stuff. Like, why does Puka, like, vomit black tar?
Yeah, I don't really understand. I think it's just a play on a monster movie, maybe.
Why is Puka, like, evil? Like, it feels like we could have done this without all the Puka stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just to, like, confuse us more. It worked if that...
It did work. If that was the case,
it did confuse us more, but I think at the detriment to their own movie.
Yeah.
Because, quite frankly, it just... I wasn't even looking for another alternative explanation.
Mm-hmm.
So when there was one offered, I was like, oh, that's cool, but, like, I wish I had been, like, looking for that.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't.
I always... There were a couple of moments that were supposed to be serious that I, like, laughed out loud at, like, the guy screaming, the main actor screaming. I found so funny. Everyone knows about Ty's dad but me!
I know. All their fights are, like...
So dramatic.
He's not the best actor.
He's not.
He's not a terrible actor, but like, he's not good in this.
No. And...
Versus, like, Melanie's fine.
And the Ty's good. The entire time I was like, this kid is a really good actor.
Like, they're really good, but everyone else is kind of, like, bizarro. The neighbor is bizarre.
Weird as shit.
His boss is bizarre.
Interesting. He was the most interesting part of the movie up until, like, whenever I was starting it and it was boring, I was like, he was the first interesting part of it. I just kept
getting, like, not interested.
Me too.
I just kept, like, falling out of interest, and then something would happen and I'd be kind of, like, interested again. But then it would, like, not really add anything to the story, and I would be like, okay. And, like,
I agree.
Puka's death, like, him axing Puka was so anticlimactic. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. Like, I never really was scared of Puka.
Yeah.
Because Puka never killed anyone.
Did he?
Ever.
He didn't kill the kid?
No. He just beat him up, and that was Wilson anyway.
Yeah.
Like, there are a few times you see Puka, like, sentiently running around, and you're like, oh, is he? But then it always is just immediately like, nope, it was Wilson.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Oh, that's not scary.
So it's not Puka. Like, the whole time I was like, so it's Wilson. I have an article up here.
Yeah.
From The Decider about Puka Explained, basically. Okay. So, how does Puka end? Wilson gets confusing flashes that cause him to question his sanity, like one photo of himself, Melanie, and Ty with a Christmas tree that eventually loses the tree and even Wilson. Everything totally spirals out of control when Wilson's dependence on the Puka suit scares Melanie out of a relationship. Wilson, convinced that there's a different and totally evil being in another Puka suit on the loose, tracks down this mysterious creature in a tree lot and stabs it to death, but that's not the end of the story. Wilson returns to Melanie's house to find it's an old folks' home. He rushes out to the house where he met Melanie while she was working as a real estate agent. To a surprise, Melanie now lives there with Ty and also Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Another Wilson, a Wilson in red carpet photos framed on the walls, enters and loses his temper with Melanie. Okay, so he's not struggling. He's like
an actor.
He gets so angry he destroys their Christmas tree. All Wilson can do is watch like a ghost as his angry doppelganger packs up Melanie and Ty in the car to go get another tree. Then a deadly car crash that sends Wilson careening out into the street, covered in blood. All he sees are red flashing and blue lights, and Ty's Puka doll silhouetted by the burning car, and new familiar faces. The woman in the car he hits looks just like his neighbor, and the EMT looks just like the guy that offered him the Puka gig. So what does that all mean? Also, the last scene is the first scene.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the last scene of the movie with all the flashing lights and Puka going, like, look at all the pretty lights.
Yeah.
That's the first scene of the movie, too. But I just, like, completely forgotten about that by the time it happened. So here's the ending of Puka. So, there's a reason why Puka ends how it began, with a Puka doll repeating the phrase, look at the pretty lights. There's a reason why the film is punctuated by moments of red and blue flashing lights, and there's a reason why the timeline doesn't add up. It's because the whole movie is a dream. Or, as fans might refer to it, a Jacob's Ladder scenario.
As How Did This Get Made fans. Yeah. I love How Did This Get Made. Great podcast.
The only thing in the film that actually happens the way you see it is the car crash that bookends the story, and also most of the Christmas freakout that precedes it.
Yeah.
Everything else is a vision, a myth, or a story told by Wilson to himself in his presumably dying moments in order to justify all his rage. The Pooka is more than just a costume imaginary Wilson puts on. The Pooka is Wilson. Wilson has a temper, as seen when he rips the top off his family tree. He believes he's like the Pooka, both naughty and nice, and just like Pooka, he believes he can't control when he'll be naughty or nice. He just wants to believe he has no control over himself, but that's not reality. The one wherein he's a mild-mannered actor with a pleasant life doesn't win, it's not true. Reality creeps through in the entire movie, and the film's inconsistencies are explained by Wilson making all this stuff up on the fly. It's why Wilson almost always rides the bus alone. It's why his neighbor dies and then reappears. It's why Melanie won't tell him anything about Ty's father, because Wilson is Ty's father, but he's a bad father, and in his fantasy, he's trying to be a rad stepdad that swoops in and grants wishes. Mm-hmm. It's why there are so many references to A Christmas Carol, a story about a man who's lived a bad life, who helplessly watches as his horrible actions and horrible fate unfold in front of him.
Doesn't he ask at one point, are you the ghost of Christmas past?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pooka is a total Jacob's Ladder scenario, but one that you can rewatch every year at Christmas time, and now that you know the ending, you'll probably pick up on even more clues. I would say, like, yes, but I feel like this is what I think the problem is. Movies like this, you need to be able to kind of see it while it's happening.
Yeah.
You need to give the audience enough clues that while they're watching, they know that what they think the truth is not maybe the truth.
Yeah.
Because I just thought he was going insane.
Yeah.
I thought the Pooka costume was making him go insane.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what I thought, which is what I thought through 90% of the movie, and what I think a lot of people probably think through 90% of the movie.
Yeah.
I have no incentive to, like, analyze every detail.
Yeah.
Because I just chalk up every weird thing to Wilson's going insane. You need to give us more than just, like, some symbolic imagery of, like, flashing lights.
True.
You need to have us have some sort of, like, concrete thing that maybe points to, like, maybe he isn't going crazy. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe this is a dream. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think movies where it's like, it was a dream. All a dream. That never... The reason that that trope makes people so mad is because if you don't hint it into it well, it's just like a deus ex machina thing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, every plot hole can be fixed by the fact that it's just a dream. Now, if that's what you were meaning to do, fine.
Yeah.
But, like, give us some clues that that's what you're meaning to do. Like,
yeah,
give
exactly.
us some hints. And you, there are movies where they do this, obviously, like Inception and things like
oh,
that.
Yeah.
They do it really well.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't get mad that the whole, it was just a dream.
Because they're like, oh, and they rewatch it. They're like, oh.
Exactly. Well,
that makes, then you can find more reasons. Like, oh, that tells that it's a dream.
I do feel like I can go back into this and see the ending coming now that I know what the ending is. But if I didn't know what the ending was, and when I didn't know what the ending was, I wouldn't have been able to guess that.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really hint towards that. All the hints are that the Pooka costume is like,
making him go insane. Really interesting.
Yeah, and I think that, like, that's the main problem with this movie is that it's hard to keep attention when it doesn't feel like there's anything to... There's no, like, suspense, really.
Yeah.
And when it happened, I was like, that's cool. And that was it.
Yeah.
I wasn't like, whoa.
I know.
Payoff. Because it wasn't payoff.
It wasn't.
It's kind of like, I think Hereditary probably does this the best, and obviously Hereditary isn't a dream. But Hereditary is, like, a story about... You constantly think, oh, it's this. No, it's
yes.
this. No, it's this. You think, oh, it's a ghost story. Oh, no,
it's a
possession story. Oh, no. And then it ends up being
a cult story.
Spoilers for Hereditary.
Yeah.
But, you know,
you guys should have seen it already.
It ends up being like this cult story. And the reason that works is because every time you start to get comfortable and think like, oh, I've got it figured out, some new piece of information
mm-hmm.
makes you go, maybe I don't have it figured out.
Yeah.
But the problem is, at the very beginning, you're like, oh, the Pooka costume is, like, evil.
Yeah.
And it never gives you a reason to not believe that.
Yeah,
it
because, never, like, the, especially the scene where he's introducing him to the Puka costume.
Yeah.
It's very eerie.
Every scene, if what you think is happening, which is, like, what we thought was happening, which is you think he's going insane because of the Puka costume, then every scene, every single scene in this movie, except for the very last scene, confirms that.
Agreed.
And, like, if you want us to think, like, be on the edge of our seat and be trying to figure it out, every single thing I think cannot just be confirmed in the movie. Because then in the end, when you're like, oh, it was a dream, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I mean, that makes sense too. But, like, my thing also would have worked. I think that's really where this movie fails, is, like, it doesn't keep me invested.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not a bad idea. It's not a bad story.
No.
The acting isn't terrible. The production quality is pretty good. Puka is an interesting thing.
Yeah, it's like the costume's really cool.
But like, just overall, the like addition of suspense was not there for me.
Yeah, I agree. What'd you give this movie?
Maybe like a 5 out of 10.
It's not bad. It's also not good.
I didn't feel any type of way while watching it. I was just kind of like, this is fine to be on in the background. Like, I'll keep this in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it wasn't scary, really, but it wasn't, like, not intriguing.
Yeah. I agree. Do a review?
I do. 5 out of 10. Visually arresting episode of Into the Dark let down by a lazy story. Previously on Into the Dark, the body gave us some cheap laughs for Halloween, and Flesh and Blood gave us some thrills on Thanksgiving. This time around, we're dealing with a demented twist on Christmas in the form of Puka, a surreal time-bending psychodrama directed by Times crime filmmaker Nacho Vigalondo.
Nacho Vigalondo also won an Academy Award for Colossal, I believe.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's start with the good. Vigalondo is a capable craftsman who imbues the story with an arresting visual aesthetic and stages some beautiful nightmarish hallucinations along the way.
That's true.
The film is a joy to look at, whether we are observing the lead character Wilson lost in a flashing fog of confusion in his apartment or going on a freaky rampage as Puka. Vigalondo's vision of a man's descent into a self-made hell really pops off the screen with color and vibrancy, accompanied by a brilliantly menacing score by Bear McCrae, while Puka, an ugly Furby-like creature, is a rather inspired design. Carries much of the film's dramatic weight on his shoulders, and he admirably breathes life into a character who is nigh on impossible to get a beat on. His performance stabilizes the first half of the story, even as events get weirder and weirder. There are some capable supporting performers around him, notably Dale Dickey, but this really is a showcase for Hatendi's range as an actor.
I disagree.
I don't think he did that good.
No. I think Ty stole the show.
I don't think he's, like, a bad actor. I just think he's kind of boring.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about him.
Same.
Since we are seeing events unfold from his unreliable perspective throughout, he is our only barometer for how we should be feeling in any given moment, because narrative starts to play fast and loose with linearity and logic. For the most part, the feeling is, what is going on? Puka is structurally compromised due to the nature of the deeply cliched and underwhelming final twist, which informs the entire plot that unfolds the 80-minute running time. The story is essentially a take on the old Charles Dickens fable, A Christmas Carol, where a man is forced to confront his bad choices in his life and the sins from his past through a mysterious supernatural alchemy. While Dickens is a suitable template for holiday theme of this episode, the reveal that Wilson is caught in some kind of hallucinatory purgatory state is like the biggest cop-out that a mystery like this can deliver an audience.
Very true.
It is the head-slapping dramatic equivalent of, it was all a dream, or he was dead the whole time, which is a frustratingly lazy way to explain all the weirdness that came before. I agree with this.
I think that The Sixth Sense does, like, a good job.
Yeah, if you want a good... If you want to see this done well.
Yeah, it does hint that he was dead the whole time. Like, especially the scenes where it never shows him opening the door. The door is always locked.
Well, it's a lot. There are a lot of things that don't make sense in the movie. You're like, oh, that sucks. Or, like, ooh. And then when you get it, you're like, oh my God, everything.
Yeah.
It's like, The Sixth Sense, the reason this does, I think I think the spoiler ban on The Sixth Sense is officially up.
Yeah. Guys, you should know now.
the reason I think The Sixth Sense works so well in this regard is that literally everything is pointing you to that conclusion, but it's all so under the radar that you don't see it.
Exactly. I love that, like, he never talks to anyone but Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah, I mean, his wife, like, ignoring him and cheating on him.
Yeah.
You're like, oh my God. It's all so innocuous that you never see it for what it really is.
Until it's revealed.
Until it's revealed. And so when the reveal comes, you're like, oh my God, everything makes sense. Yes. And the kid's power suddenly makes sense. Like, it all ties in why they met each other, mm-hmm. all these things. Versus something like this, it's like, this doesn't add, I mean, it explains it, but it's like any other explanation would have worked also.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, we could have easily swapped out the endings and this movie could be the same.
Yeah.
And boy, is there a lot of weirdness in this film. From the story's setup of the Puka costume to the individual sequences of Wilson seemingly losing his grip on reality and sanity. But all of that intrigue, and the whole plot itself, is rendered totally inert by the ending. Films like Jacob's Ladder and Stay use a similar device of a man in the throes of death imagining a different reality that combines past, present, and fantasy to create their psychological and spiritual journeys. Mm-hmm. Only these retrospective revelations feel both earned and poignant. The denouement in Puka merely serves to excuse all the weirdness that came before and exposes the script for not really having a plot to begin with.
Yeah.
Essentially, everything takes place inside this guy's mind, whether he's dead, dying, or simply driven mad with guilt. Granted, there are some clues weaved throughout Wilson's breakdown that telegraph the twist, such as recurring characters in strange places, overt this-isn't-really-happening dialogue, and nonlinear time jumps. But it isn't enough to justify these creative choices in the narrative. For instance, Puka himself is almost tangential to everything once you factor in why this is happening. It was just Wilson's son's toy. Maybe Wilson was a Puka mascot in real life, maybe he wasn't, it's never made clear. The point is, Puka's naughty or nice gimmick is ultimately irrelevant to the answer of this film's mystery, yet he's the star of the entire show. It makes me wonder if the script was originally conceived to be more of a Jekyll and Hyde retelling, and then Blumhouse find a way to oar it into their holiday-themed series and tacked on an explain-all final scene. With that said, the first half of Puka is fresh and exciting. The misadventures of Wilson inside Puka are the highlights, particularly his first apartment-based outburst. Had the film jettisoned the eye-rolling twist at the end and simply made this about a man's mental disintegration into a murderous rage via a big fluffy mascot toy, it might have been rendered even more frightening as a result. It certainly would have been a more original take on the nature of duality, but we got what we got. Into the Dark stories continue to tell different kinds of horror stories that will strike a chord with different audiences. The Bodies seemed to better play at splatter horror comedy crowds, while Flesh and Blood was a hit with classic thriller lovers, so maybe Puka will engage a surrealist aficionado with its out-of-body madness. Pretty sure there will be something for everyone once the series completes its 12 months of terror. Keep watching. I will be reviewing all the episodes in the series as they come out. Next up is New Year, New You. See you then.
Interesting.
So, I agree with most of this. I disagree. I was actually not a very big fan of the beginning of this movie.
Me either, or the actor.
Or the acting. I think, like, I do agree that I just feel like I see what they were going for, but I don't think they laid it out very well.
I agree.
I think that there are movies that do it, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
And that, like, if you're gonna do it, you should really be prepared to do it.
You should really cover all your bases.
Yeah. I don't know,
guys. So we will probably be doing a couple of more classic Christmas movies coming up.
Probably.
So thank you guys for listening, and you can donate to our Patreon to get access to our entire back catalog, including two Christmas movies on there.
Yeah, let's see.
Happiest Season.
Happiest Season and
Holiday.
Let's see if we can see how many posts we even have. Oh, so many. I can't see the exact number, but...
We have a lot.
A lot of posts up there, including, oh my God, things like the B-movie.
Oh,
things
like, go down a little bit more and we can look at last year's Christmas movies.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Oh, looks like we only did Elf.
Wow. Good on us, I guess.
Oh, we only did Elf. That was the only one we did. Everything else is lots of, like, Just fun stuff.
The fun Joker, stuff, guys. Lost in Translation.
Pan's Labyrinth.
Vivarium's fun.
Devil All the Time.
Sleepaway Camp.
Lots of things.
Easy A's on there, too.
Yeah. Get out there.
Yeah, guys. Test the waters. Test only a dollar.
Only a dollar. You get access to all that. And then benefits go up as your
yeah
donation goes up.
So thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye.